a multi-party system is normal. You only have a two-party system if there's repression. It's not natural.
Hi, I'm Alexis Garcia with Reason TV, and our guest today is well known in libertarian circles for his expertise on election law. You can basically say he's the guru of third parties and ballot access. He's also the publisher and editor of Ballot Access News. I'm here with Richard Winger. Now, Richard, it's so great to talk to you. And, you know, I've heard you introduced so many times as the walking encyclopedia of election law. How does one become involved in that, and why did you start Ballot Access News?
This is one of the things that anchors me being a libertarian. Before the government got involved in printing ballots, we had total freedom, and we didn't have government-printed ballots until 1889, but parties mostly printed up ballots and distributed them to anybody that wanted. And if you used a party-printed ballot, you were free to scratch off names of people you didn't like and write in somebody else. But we had complete freedom to run for office. You could get into the race the week before the election. There was no filing fees, no declarations of candidacy, no being thrown off the ballot because you made a tiny little mistake. And that's what freedom is. There were disadvantages to that, of course, but ever since the government took it over, they've been using it as a tool of repression.
You know, we really pride ourselves on our democracy and our freedom, but is that the case when it comes to actually running for office?
There's so many ways in which the United States is near the bottom of democracies, not just about ballot access and treatment of small parties. We're the only country in the world that won't let people register to vote because in the past, they committed a crime. Now, I'm not saying all states do that, but some still do. We're the only country in the world where the adult citizens living in the capital city have no voting representation in the national legislative body. We're the only country in the world that has a popular vote to elect the chief executive, but the person who comes in second can still win the election. It's frustrating to me that Americans don't have more awareness of how many big problems there are.
And we've seen in this cycle, we have two very unpopular candidates. We have a couple of third party options that are really kind of picking up traction. What's it been like this cycle for people like Gary Johnson and Jill Stein?
Well, of course, both Gary Johnson and Jill Stein are quite happy right now because they're getting unparalleled publicity. It's kind of ironic in this country. Ballot access for president for minor parties and independents has been getting slowly easier. In fact, the number of signatures to get on the ballot in all the states for president is now at the lowest level as a percentage since 1936, which is amazing, really. We keep working and working to improve the laws, and for president, we're slowly succeeding. But ironically, for Congress, it's going the other direction. Now, here's the Libertarian Party on the ballot in all 50 states for president. But how about U.S. House of Representatives? The whole country votes on that, too. And there's only about 1/4 of the districts this year that will see a Libertarian on their ballot for U.S. House. A little known fact is the ballot access laws for Congress are much worse than president. And they're getting worse.
Well, that's so interesting because I actually worked on a Senate campaign in Massachusetts and kind of saw firsthand just the craziness when it comes to getting signatures, taking them to their own individual towns to get certified. It just seemed like even being part of a party apparatus like the Republican or Democratic Party, it was tough enough. Can you talk a little bit about the cost associated with not having that party apparatus and how that it basically creates a barrier to entry, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm really glad you mentioned Massachusetts. People in Massachusetts have a high opinion of themselves and their state, and they should. Massachusetts is the birthplace of the fight for independence, really is. But Massachusetts, year after year, is the only state where a majority of the U.S. House seats in November only have one candidate on the ballot. In 2014, they have 9 seats, and 6 of them, there was only a Democrat on the ballot. And this year, 5 of them only have a Democrat on the ballot. And the people of Massachusetts, they don't seem to notice there's anything wrong. And for the legislature, always over half the seats only have one person on the ballot. It's because it's so hard to get on a primary ballot in Massachusetts. It's easily the worst in the country.
Other states other than Massachusetts that you would say are like really bad offenders?
Oh, horrible. The absolute worst ballot access law in the country is Georgia for U.S. House. For an independent or a minor party, The law is so bad, it's 73 years old, and no minor party has ever complied with it in 73 years. And no independent has complied with it since 1964.
And while some states make it next to impossible for independent candidates to get on the ballot, others like to change their rules without notice. This happened to Gary Johnson in Ohio after the Secretary of State threatened to keep the Libertarian Party nominee off the ballot.
That is so maddening. Ohio law explicitly says people who use the independent candidate petition procedure put a substitution committee on the petition so they can use stand-ins. And the Libertarian Party didn't know who was running for president or vice president until the end of May. And it wanted to get working on the petition. And it's too hard to be a party. So they did the independent petition. So they put stand-ins for president and vice president. And then they go to turn them in. And the Secretary of State acts like he never heard of such a thing. And the newspapers didn't investigate. If they had, they would have seen this had been used by John Anderson in 1980, by the Constitution Party 3 years in a row, 1996, 2000, and 2004, by Ralph Nader in 2004 for vice president. And they act like, oh, the Secretary of State did the Libertarians a big favor by letting them use this thing, which has been used all along.
They're so secure with the two-party system, why would they care if there's a third option?
There's been unbelievable hostility just in the last few months to minor parties by certain states reinterpreting their rules to make them much worse and doing it at the last minute so there's no time for the parties to fight back. There's been 13 people in history who ran in major party presidential primaries and then they ran in the general election as independents. And for 100 years, we've had presidential primaries since 1912. For 100 years, nobody had ever been kept off the general election ballot as a minor party or independent on the grounds that he or she had run in a major party presidential primary. And then they did that to Gary Johnson in Michigan, 2012. Well, this year, there's a guy named Rocky De La Fuente. Well, he ran in a bunch of Democratic presidential primaries. And now all of a sudden, state after state after state is telling him, hey, you can't be on the ballot as an independent because you ran in the Democratic presidential primary, even though these are states that allowed it before.
And why do you think that's happening?
There's so much insecurity. There's so much fear. When the country is relaxed, the ballot access laws get better. And we made huge gains in the late 90s. But every time there's fear, things go backwards. There was a lot of fear. Oh, a terrible amount of backward movement in the early 30s when people were afraid the Communist Party was getting strong. It really wasn't. But people didn't know that. And state after state made the ballot access laws in 1931 and 33. Another bad period was 1969, 1971. That was because George Wallace shocked the country when in 1968 he got 13% of the vote. Well, that was the first time anybody had got over 2% outside the major party since 1924. So it really was revolutionary, not in a good way, not at all. And so that was the worst period for making hostile changes in ballot access laws right after him.
The counter argument to all this would be that it should be hard to get on the ballot because it shows that you're a serious candidate and that you're able to navigate government properly. I mean, what is your rebuttal to that?
Well, if everybody had to do these difficult things, that argument might seem worth exploring. But the truth is, it's not true. The Democratic and Republican Party has never had to petition for itself to get a place in the ballot. Every time, once in a while, something goes wrong and one of the major parties loses status as a qualified party. But every single time, the legislature just changes the law. Like in Florida, it's really funny. In 1931, they repealed all means for new parties or independent candidates to get on the ballot. They were mad because in 1928, the Communist Party and the Socialist Party did rather well. In fact, for both parties, of all things, Florida was their best state in the presidential election. Then, of course, they defined party as a group that had polled 30% of the vote for some statewide office in the previous election. Well, ha ha, in 1936, the Republicans didn't get 30% for anything.
But they somehow still survived.
So in 1937, they reduced it to 15%. The most recent one was Virginia, 1990. the law defined a party as something that polled 10% for any statewide office in the last election. Well, in 1990, the only statewide race up was U.S. Senate. And John Warner was a Republican. He was very popular. And the Democrats decided not to run anybody against him. Too late. They realized they're not going to get 10%. They go off the ballot. So the legislature was called in the special session and said, okay, a party is something that polled 10% at either of the last two elections. They always do that.
You mentioned a couple of these instances where they changed the rules last minute. Do you think that they would ever try to do that to any of the major party candidates? Because I know there's been instances where Republicans and Democrats don't get their stuff in on time, but they still end up on the ballot.
That's absolutely right. Every single time the Democrats and Republicans have been late to get on for president, they miss a deadline too. Everybody's human. They're always forgiven, and they should be forgiven. We shouldn't elevate form over substance. We got to have a free election after all. But in 1964, the Democratic Party of Iowa was late certifying Lyndon Johnson. In 1988, both major parties were late in Indiana. In 2008, they were both late in Texas. Yeah, so what?
They just let it slide.
Yes. And this year, you probably read, technically the Republican Party of Minnesota didn't do all the paperwork right to certify their presidential electors in Minnesota. But the Minnesota Supreme Court just said, never mind.
So how does limiting ballot access affect our democracy? And what can be done to change the status quo?
Well, we have one of the lowest turnout rates of any free country in the world. You know, in Canada, every district for House of Commons in the 2015 election had at least five parties in the ballot. Because in Canada, ballot access is easy and equal. You can run for House of Commons in Canada with 100 signatures and $1,000. And in Britain, it's only 10 signatures and £500. And so Britain also typically, the typical district has six candidates.
And it doesn't crowd the ballot, because I feel like that's a big concern people always talk about. It's like, well, there's just going to be too many names.
That's ridiculous. You know, most restaurants have menus that are, you know, way more choices, but somehow people still cope.
Richard, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, Alexis, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
And we've been talking to Richard Winger with Ballot Access News. For Reason TV, I'm Alexis Garcia.